Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamal captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. It was, that's how we came, became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight I'm delighted to welcome along our only summer special guest, Greg Strong. Greg, thank you very much for joining me tonight.
Not a problem at all. It's something I'm really looking forward to doing.
A few years of your Motherwell career to look back on, arriving in 2000 on loan from Bolton. Prior to that, you had a few loans elsewhere at Stoke and Blackpool. Was it fair to say that...
Yeah.
Your time at Bolton wasn't quite going in the direction you hoped?
Yeah, I suppose when I joined Bolton, I joined at a time when they'd just been promoted to the Premier League. I joined from Wigan that I was at. They was in League Two at the time. I was only relatively young. So moving into Bolton at that time, where all of a sudden we're starting to spend money, and good money at them times, which seems pennies nowadays. But, you know, they were signing Jerry Taggart, and they were signing Nathan Blake, Dean Holdsworth, spending a lot of money for them. It was difficult, you know, to get in and around the first team. I found more of my opportunities obviously came when we seemed to have a couple of years where we went from the Championship into the Premier, got relegated back down. So most of my game time was in the Championship and not in the Premier League, even though I did play one game.
You arrived at Motherwell on loan, but... The characters and the size of the dressing room, there was a lot of big names in there, names that perhaps were the biggest that Motherwell have had in their long history in terms of guys like Spencer, Gorham, certainly big characters. How did you feel coming from down south to settle in there?
Yeah, it was, I remember when I first came, and I think John Spencer was one of the first guys I met. Spencer's a brilliant character, you know, really, really good, welcoming, fun guy to meet. And he introduced me to all the guys as they came in. There was Pat Nevin, who, even though he had a senior role at the club, I think he was chief exec at the time, Pat Nevin, but still playing, he didn't get away from the banter that was flying around from Spence as well, who introduced him to me, and with a few jokes that I don't think Pat particularly liked. And obviously you had Andy Gorham, you had Don Goodman, Jed Brannan, Lee McCulloch, you know, Benito Kendall. There were some real, and like say, Andy Gorham, who's a larger-than-life character as well. It was a proper changing room. You know, one that I suppose a lot of clubs, a lot of younger players going into clubs now, you don't get as many experienced, loud, you know, vocal changing rooms like that anymore. So it was a little bit daunting, but I knew I needed to get in there and hit the ground running. And you gain the respect by your performances as much as anything. So I knew I needed to get in there and try and first of all get into the team and make sure that I could put a stamp on it.
And you certainly did just that, getting a good run of games before the conclusion of the season, the team narrowly missing out in Europe. A last day victory over Rangers, not quite enough, despite the fact I think a lot of people in the crowd that day thought the result between Hearts and Hibs was going in their favour, and we had made the UEFA Cup. That must have been quite an introduction to Scottish football, and a successful introduction at that.
Yeah, it was brilliant. You know, I mean, having something to fight for and a realistic aim at the end of it, you know, to go and play in Europe was, you know, something that we was all hungry for and we was all desperate to achieve. A game that sticks out in my mind, we played Hearts away. I'm not sure it was one of my first games as well, actually. It might have been my first away game. And it was obviously us and Hearts who were fighting it out. We had a chance probably 10 minutes from the end with Pat Nevin on the 6-yard box that unfortunately put over the bar. And you just felt at that moment in time that was our chance. You know, our chance to go and just edge ahead of them. But it wasn't meant to be, but it wasn't for lack of effort or lack of desire or trying, because we were all desperate to do it in that changing room. And like I say, on the last game, I remember it very well. And parts in the game, the crowd would be cheering, and you'd think that's us, we're in a good position. I remember I had a goal disallowed myself in that game against Rangers as well, a header at the far post. And we didn't know what to think until the very final whistle, when we were told that unfortunately we just missed out.
I've not mentioned Billy Davis, and amongst these big characters, obviously Billy at the time was cutting his teeth in management, his first managerial role. How did you find Billy and your arrival at the club? Obviously, he was the man in charge of selling the club and their vision to you.
Yeah. I genuinely think Billy got the best out of me. You know, there was no hiding place with Billy. You know, you went into your work every day. You worked very, very hard. And then when you left your work, you still thought about your work. You know, he was very, very strict on our weight. You know, he wanted us to be conscious of being a footballer 24 hours a day, not just turn it on and off when we went into the club. And he was very, very intense, you know, with training. You know, the tempo always had to be very, very high. The work rate had to always be very, very high. And he didn't get an easy day with him. But in some ways, I often felt that he did get the best out of me. He had a couple of little things where there was myself, there was the meeting. Benito Campbell, there was Big Kevin Townsley, and he used to say the bigger lads, he didn't like us having days off, really. Sometimes the lads would be off on a Wednesday and he'd get us in and just take us round the back on the AstroTurf and just have us doing things. He said it was good for us to keep the legs moving and keep working and not have that downtime. So yeah, like I say, I was probably at the fittest I've ever been during that spell with Billy. I was probably more conscious of my diet than I've ever been, but in turn he got the best out of a lot of people.
And obviously Billy has had a long career in management since Motherwell, but recently has found himself out of a job and has struggled to get back into first team management. Is that something that's surprised you?
It does surprise me. I think when you look at his record, in terms of getting teams in the Championship into the playoffs, I think it's probably second to none. You know, he did it with Derby, he did it with Preston, and he did it with Forest. You know, he's got them there. Sometimes he's not quite got over the line, he obviously has at times as well. So yeah, his record speaks for itself. However, yeah, the changing world of football, you know, once you get off that merry-go-round, it's difficult to get back on at times, because there's always someone new coming through, a new hungry coach who people see as the future, or a new foreign coach coming in, and the amount of jobs doesn't get more, the amount of jobs is less and less all the time. So it's difficult to get back in. I must admit, I did expect him to come back in at one of the Scottish clubs before now. But who knows? I'm sure with the way Billy is, he'll still be studying games. You know, his attention to detail was very, very good. So I'm sure, even though he's not in work at this moment in time, you can bet yourself he'll be working very hard, looking and scouting and analysing things. And when that opportunity does come, he'll be ready.
Into your first full season, and I suppose what was the first season of your career that you played regularly throughout. The team made a pretty horrible start to the season. The first win didn't come until a, a 4-0 victory over St Johnston, which was in October. Albeit you did manage to get your first goal for the club in a 3-0 victory over Queen's Park in the League Cup. A squad of that quality making such a poor start to the season must have come as a bit of a shock to everyone in that dressing room.
Yeah, it did. It really did, because we, after the ending to the season prior to that, we all expected to hit the ground running, go and challenge again. It was really disappointing. I remember we had many, many meetings, you know, players on their own and also meetings with the management staff, just to try and work out what it was. But football's a funny thing, and it goes, you know, momentum can work in two ways. And when you're on a losing cycle, it's difficult to turn it around at times. And it's who knows how you turn it around, because wins breed confidence, confidence breeds wins. And that's a knock-on effect. But on the flip side of that, when you're losing games each week and it's difficult to score goals and it's difficult to keep clean sheets, it becomes a bit of a mental battle as well. And I think we were stuck in that. And again, I think a game, yeah, I'm sure it was in that season that sticks out in my mind. We went away to St Mirren and ground out a win there. And I remember the changing room being as good as I'd seen it afterwards. The lads were jumping up and down it. And it was a relief as much as a celebration. It was a relief, you know. No disrespect to St Mirren, but we'd just gone and beaten St Mirren. At St Mirren, we didn't get a trophy for it. But and after that, I'm sure our results sort of went on the upturn after that.
The season, looking back on it, it kind of petered out to an eighth place finish, very comfortable in the end. It also gave Billy Davis the chance to breed some of the younger players into the squad. Keith Lasley getting an introduction, Stephen Pearson, James McFadden, all guys that have went on to have fantastic careers in the game. Could you see from an early stage when these guys were introduced that the talent that they had?
Yeah, definitely. And you can add into that Stevie Hamill as well, you know, who he came in there at left back, and I remember playing alongside him thinking, because I'd been playing in England as well, I thought, this boy, he can go for a lot of money, you know, because he was powerful, he had a good left foot, he was full of energy, he was committed, and I suppose the most important thing about him, he was really willing to learn and listen. Obviously with Faddy, you just had that natural ability, that natural spark that he had. I remember we'd train sometimes and he'd come in, and again, some of those experienced lads, he didn't care. You know, he didn't how we tried to stop him. He'd try and meg us. He'd do whatever it took. And he was a cheeky little lad, and he was great. I remember he was always threatening with cutting his little rat's tail off that he used to have. And Faddy being Faddy, I remember him saying to us one time, we were going away on a pre-season trip, and we'd said to him, we're going to cut that off by the end of the trip. And he said, well, you can cut it off, but someone's getting hurt. I know I might get hurt at the end of it, but someone's getting hurt if it does. And that was Faddy all over. You know, he had that little bit about him, you know, so you could see that he was gonna go and take a lot of stopping for him to go and have a good career. And like I said, same with Pizzo as well, and Keith Lasley. And Keith had come in from being an electrician, I think. And he had that bit between his teeth and really wanted to grab that chance and not let it go. And Pizzo, he's possibly one of the best in terms of physically, in terms of running. We used to call him the Greyhound, because it didn't matter whether we did short distance, long distance running, whatever the running was, Pizzo was up the front. You know, he was a big, long stride. Horrible for pre-season to be running behind him. He just made it look so easy. But it was a great combination at that time as well, you know, bringing in them boys who were all hungry. Very, very talented, very, very hungry, but as much as anything as well, they were all great lads, really, really good lads, and mixing it with a lot of the experience we had around there as well.
And for young guys coming into the league, there was a lot of star quality and star power in the league at that time. I look at guys like Claudio Caniggia, Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, Henrik Larsson, Stelian Petrov, some really big names and some fantastic players.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was at a time when they were spending, I can't remember, was it 6, 7, 8 million pounds on players? can't remember how much Rangers signed Flo for. Am I right in saying around about 11 million?
Yeah, I think it was £12 million.
Yeah, 11, £12 million were. You look at that now, and it's no disrespect to Scottish footballer, but you wonder whether them times will come back. You know, but it was a really good time when these players were coming in, and for us to play against them, and me personally, to see these guys coming in, all I wanted to do was be the best I could be, and the way that I saw I could do that was to put myself against the best. So coming up against these guys, I remember friends of mine used to say, I'm nervous going and playing against these guys, and I wasn't, because I wanted to pit myself against them, and you know what, if they were better than me, which sometimes they were obviously, then I knew I needed to improve. But I certainly loved when, like I said, the forward line that they had, that the Rangers had, and Celtic had, and playing against Cathedral, was at Dundee at the time when he first came in, and Dundee was signing a lot of sort of some unknown players as well, but really, really talented foreign players bringing in. So it was a really, really exciting time in Scotland.
And given the mixture of youth and experience, but focusing on the experience, for guys that had been around the block, they don't want these foreign players coming into the Scottish game and showing them up. So there must have been a real determination amongst that Motherwell squad to hold their own and get the better of them at times.
Yeah, there was. Like I say, every professional's got the pride, you know, and no one wants to be humiliated. And everyone wants to be as good as they can be and show themselves to be better than whoever you're pitting your wits against on that given day. But as much as anything, I think it gives us an excitement, because we had a lot of talented lads in there. We sometimes going into games, we'll show you sort of attitude. You know, we're not here just to be cannon fodder. We want to come and we want to compete. And I remember games that we'd go and we would really compete against a lot of these guys. And it was really, really, for Scottish football in general, it was really exciting times.
The 2001-2002 season, again, the team started poorly. And in this occasion, Billy Davis paid for the poor start with his job. Eric Black came in as his successor. You would score your first goal at home for the club in a 2-1 defeat to Celtic. I remember that game pretty well, despite being fairly young at the time, just for the ridiculous act of simulation by Sean Maloney under the challenge of Eddie Forrest. I actually managed to watch it back earlier on, and even after all these years, I'm still quite annoyed about it. It sometimes happens when you play against these bigger teams that they tend to get that rub of the green, don't they?
Yeah, of course they do. Sometimes you say they make their own luck. You know, because they have a lot of the ball around the danger zones of the opposition, around the final third, around the box, and so they get a lot more penalties, a lot more free kicks. But there's no doubt about it, in certain games that we played, you know, whether it be at Parkhead, whether it be at Ibrox, or whether it be any of the top teams that are played, we never felt as if any of them decisions went in our favour. It always seemed to go the opposite way. Call that coincidence, call that whatever you will, but there was certainly... We had many frustrations through things like that. But the game that you're talking about there, I remember it well, because it was only afterwards that I was told that Terry Butcher was in the crowd watching. And when he came in with Eric Black, he said, "Listen, we'll watch the game, and we're quite happy." And he pulled us to one side and he said, "Listen, you did well defensively, I was quite happy." And he just gave someone like him coming in and speaking to me personally and saying, "Listen, I was really pleased with your performance, you did this, you did that, I can improve you on this." I remember just thinking, wow, you know, I'm really looking forward to this. As much as I was really disappointed, I really was, and with Billy going, because like I say, I did feel he got the best out of us. He wasn't everyone's cup of tea, but for me personally, he brought me there, he'd shown a lot of faith in me. I did feel you know, quite bad about that, but on the flip side, because football is, time moves on and you've got to move on. I was excited about the prospect of working with Eric and Terry as well.
Does that kind of soften the blow somewhat, that an experienced coach like Eric Black is coming in, and then a huge figure in the game like Terry Butcher as his number two. That must help when a good manager has been replaced by two hugely respected individuals.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and like I say, as much as I was always a player who I always felt bad if any manager lost the job, because no matter whether I played a small part or a big part in that season, the manager would have gone, I'd played our part, and could I have done more, and you know, what could I have done more? So I was always quite reflective on that, and did always feel really bad when any manager lost the job, because ultimately the players, for whatever reason, haven't delivered. But to see them two coming in, and I remember the first couple of sessions being really bright, really energetic, and really slightly different to Billy, because it was a lot more fun. And that's nothing against Billy. It was just seemed a little bit less intense, if that's probably the right phrasing for it. And for me being a centre half with and Terry coming in, you know, I couldn't wait to sort of pick his brain, listen to what he was telling us, and how he could help us.
The results improved to a certain extent. It was very much a mixed bag in the early stages, but again, the younger players were getting a chance to flourish, and in particular, James McFadden was grabbing a lot of the headlines at that time for a number of individual performances and some great goals as well. That, I suppose, when it's as a supporter, when the younger guys are getting their chance, you tend to go a wee bit easier on the team as a whole. I think people love to see guys coming through the academy and getting a chance in the first team. And as a more experienced head at that time, it must give you guys a lift as well to know that there's young guys on the fringes and young guys in the team that have got that level of ability.
Yeah, definitely. And it's the old saying, isn't it? If you're good enough, you're old enough. And these boys were all good enough. They were a good group all coming through at the same time. We possibly saw it as our job and our role to help them a little bit more, to take a little bit of the brunt off them, and to try and, whether it dragged more out of us a little bit more, and whether it gave us all a little bit more, like you said, the supporter goes back to the old song, doesn't he? He's one of our own, and it's something that all supporters love, seeing their own lads come through and do well, and it proves the academy works. And it just gives everyone a boost, and us having them guys coming through, and sometimes as well going into games, and just playing, especially Faddy, playing without any fear at all. He didn't, like I say, from a young boy coming training with us, he didn't care who he played against, didn't matter. It was a game of football for him. And that sort of rubbed off a little bit on us as well. You know, the fact that whoever he played, he would go and he would try and do his bit. And it just sort of, whether it released a little bit of pressure or whether it just sort of, to everyone, you know what, get the ball into this lad, he'll do his magic, and it just sort of gave us a little bit more of a focus as well, for, you know, someone to get the ball into.
A kind of hot point of that season was the cup tie at Dunfermline, where sometimes when the team's struggling, a wee cup run can really lift the spirits. On that occasion, Motherwell came off very much second best, 3-0 down after 46 minutes. Stuart Elliott would get a goal back just before full time. The stories go that the dressing room got somewhat heated after that game. David Kelly, a player that was mentioned in the subsequent aftermath of the defeat in the cup. Is that just passions running high and professional pride taking a bit of a dent?
Yeah, listen, a lot of the good changing rooms I've been in, you know, rose up. You know, I remember the first, when you said that we had a bad start in my early times, you know, we had people in there, Andy Gorham, we'd have Don Goodman, we'd have Sven. These guys aren't going to just sit there and be quiet. They've all got opinions and they've all got big voices. So we had quite a few, you know, volatile discussions, as you would do in the, when things weren't going well, and fingers pointed in the right way. You know, people dug out. If you're not delivering, dug out in front of everyone, and people weren't scared to do that. I remember the game that we were speaking about, the confirm it. Yeah, the first half had gone so bad, and Eric was fuming, along with Terry as well. They was both fuming at half time, and they said, the game's over, it's done. You've let yourselves down, but go and do what you can to make it better. You know, if you can get yourselves back in it, brilliant, but go and make it better. After when we came in, what did the game finish in the end?
3-1.
It finished 3-1.
Yeah.
So we came in at the end, and obviously, whether we performed better, whether Dunfermline took the foot off again, some people thought that we'd done that, but we still got a bit of a roast in which, listen, you take it on the chin at that time, because we had let ourselves down. And that's when difference of opinion happened. And unfortunately, I don't think Ned played for us again after that.
The 24th of April 2002 is a day that changed the outlook of Motherwell Football Club for forever, really. The administration, subsequently 17 players were released, of which you unfortunately were one of. There was a lot of talk in the aftermath about the way it was handled, and as one of the more experienced figures amongst the 17 players that were released, you rightfully spoke up about the way it was handled. The frustration was clear, and a very unfortunate chain of events got us to that point in 2002. A very sour way to have to leave the football club.
Yeah, it was. From a football point of view and from a life point of view, it was devastating, really. You know, a lot of us, I remember Cal Reddy, there was a lot of us who committed to the club, and the club had committed to us. They'd offered us a contract, and we all signed the contract. And then when all of a sudden the rug's pulled from underneath you, when we've all made commitments, I just bought a house, and I had a mortgage, a car, I had commitments, so we all did. When all of a sudden things change and the rug's pulled from underneath you, and rather than say, well, you know what, you've got a year, 18 months, and plan your future, you might not be here. You know, the club might not want you, but you have time to build and work out what you're going to do. Literally, we had that day. You know, we was all summoned to the club, and I'm not talking bad of the club here, but time moves on, and we're all big boys. You move on. So I won't speak bad, and I won't slag the club off. I'm sure that they, on reflection, look and realise that things should and could have been dealt with a lot better. You know, but the disappointment from us was we didn't, like, I know it's been stated that I said in the past, we were all put into different rooms with people who didn't know us, didn't know about our careers, didn't know about our lives, didn't know, and just told, as a number, what your fate was. And like I said, I remember the drive home being, I mean, so many things in my mind, what do I do? You know, I'm going to go home to my wife now and tell her that we haven't got a job. As of today, I haven't got a job. You know, I was ringing agents, I was speaking to everyone who I could. So it was a horrible, really, really horrible time, not just for myself, but for so many people. And even for the guys who stayed, it was a horrible time. You know, I'm still great friends with Martin Corrigan. You know, he's a really, really good friend of mine, and he was devastated, you know, because he saw the effect it had on his pals, his teammates, and he found that difficult as well, being one of the ones who stayed and having an element of guilt about him where he shouldn't have had. But how can this be right? You know, all my pals are struggling and upset, and the wives are upset, and I'm just here carrying on. So, yeah, it had a bad effect for everyone involved at the club.
And I suppose it's perhaps extenuated a wee bit when you've got a club that's so close-knit, everyone knows everyone, it's a small group of staff in the non-playing side of things. You just see so many people that you've become very close with, all suffering at the same time. Very, very difficult.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure now that, I know Alan Kitman's still there, and there's people still involved at the club who would have been there when we were. And like I say, it was it must have been a strange sort of feeling, because one day we're working alongside these guys. I think our last game before we got the dreaded news, it was away at Kilmarnock, and I'm sure we won it quite convincingly, actually. I'm not sure it was 3 or 4 nil on the day. But that was just a release, you know, going out on the pitch. We knew that we were going to get told the following week of what was happening. So we, from being shoulder to shoulder with these lads, sharing every day and every experience with them, not only the players, but the canteen staff, the cleaners, the groundsmen, knowing us all, everyone knowing each other as well as they did, it had a huge effect, you know. And like, I know I've mentioned it a couple of times now, this word guilt, but some of the lads in there, and I spoke to many of them, I spoke to all of them, obviously, and I said, listen, you got to do what you got to do, you know. Life moves on, yes, it's not good for us, but, you know, it's no reflection on you, or you just got to do what you got to do. So yeah, it was very, very tough for a lot of people.
I guess you were one of the lucky ones. You were able to win a move to Hull City quite soon afterwards. For other guys, they weren't quite as fortunate, where they would fall out the game. And I know it's something that perhaps wasn't talked about as much in those days, in terms of footballers and the battles with mental health issues and so on. But something like that happening to you, particularly when you've got a family to support, you're the breadwinner of the family, a blow like that could set you back for many years.
Oh, 100%, you know. And like I said, I was quite fortunate in terms of I had an offer the day after from a team abroad, actually. But I wasn't in a mental state to accept that offer, because I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know what my legal rights were. I didn't know, you know, and my head was in just chaos. So me flying abroad and signing for the club at that time wouldn't have worked for me, you know, and it wouldn't have been fair on the club probably, because he wouldn't have got a proper player who was fully focused. But yes, I was fortunate enough to get. I got a 3-year deal down at Hull on an emerging club who wanted to rebuild and get back to the greats of whatever they'd done, and we did that. But for some of the boys, I'm not even sure whether Carl Reddy ever played again. Now, Carl, I know at the time, was in talks about signing a new contract, and he'd agreed to bring his family and change the kids' schools and do this, do that, because of this promise of this new deal. And as soon as the rug was pulled under his feet, I'm not sure, and maybe you'll be able to tell me a little bit better, I'm not sure he ever kicked the ball again after that, Carl. And he was probably playing as well as he had in a long time at that time.
I couldn't be 100% sure, to be honest with you, but I did read press stories from the fallout of administration, and it didn't suggest that he was playing at that time, certainly.
Yeah, no, I genuinely don't think he ever kicked a ball again, which is sad, you know, because that's ultimately ended someone's career.
Was there no kind of warning signs as supporters that it just came as a complete bolt from the blue? Was it the same for the players at that time?
100%, exactly the same. You know, we were all shocked. There wasn't any build up to it as such, and usually in football's it's a village, and you'll always get a rumour from someone who knows someone who's mates with someone, or, you know what I mean, and that's the way that the rumour mill works. But nothing at all. It was a complete surprise to us. You know, like I said, it's sad that it's one of the memories, and certainly a sour note to leave it on. But I'm a big believer, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and I learned so much about myself, my people around me, and it taught me so much in terms of moving on in my career. I know I had discussions with Hull City, Adam Pearson, the chairman there, when I was signing, that I never ever thought I would have in my life, you know, about the future of the club, what's it like financially behind the scenes, what plans have you got in place, what happens if this, what happens if that, and I was asking questions that I would never have asked any of them questions, so it sort of protected me and armed me for the future, I suppose, in some ways as well.
And you would return to Scottish football with spells at Livingston and Dundee as well. Was that a sort of redemption, getting back and getting to prove yourself all over again in Scottish football?
Yeah, well, I remember getting the call. I mean, I'd gone... you can look through my career, and whenever I was at a club and I wasn't playing, I was a guy who'd go and knock on the door and say, can I go on loan, can I go and play? Because that, for me, that being a professional footballer was not sitting in the stand and watching my mates play every week. Being a professional footballer was going and playing. You know, some of my loan spells were probably only for 4 or 5 games, but it was because I wanted to go and play. So when that opportunity came to come back to Livingston, I'd gone to Boston at the time with Steve Evans. I was having a really, really not great time at all with it. And they swapped me. I got the phone call. It was deadline day. Richard Goff and Archie Knox had taken over there. And I got the phone call to say, you know, it could be a swap deal involving me and, is it Stephen Boyack?
Yeah.
And it took a little bit of convincing, not because I wanted to stay at Boston, because it was one of the worst times I'd had in football, you know, being there at that time. It was sort of hell. But for me to move my family again was the difficult one, you know, because I had a young son and you've got a lot more to think about. And for that spell, it would have meant me living away from home until the end of the season, because it was deadline day move, like I say. But I decided to do it after speaking to Richard Goff a number of times, and I think they signed 6 of us, with Eric Dillamore being one of them as well, ex-Motherwell player. They signed 6 of us, and I think there was 7 or 8 points adrift at the bottom of the table at that time, and we managed to stay up. Last game of the season, we needed a draw at home against Dundee to stay up, and we did it, which was a minor miracle, really, to get us to stay up in the SPL that season, which then meant I stayed another season as well.
And after you hung up your boots and your playing career came to an end, you would go on to manage Real for 6 years, and currently at Plymouth as the chief scout, working alongside Derek Adams, another former teammate. So I suppose Motherwell has kind of followed you about in your career.
Yeah, it has. And like I said, for as much as, you know, the negative and what we talk about, how I left and it was over for everything, so many good times there and so many good people who I met, you know, both in the club and out with the club as well, who will probably be friends for life. You know, like I said, Martin Corrigan, he's certainly one who would pick up the phone, and we still speak regularly. And I've spoken to Alan, the kit man. And these memories sort of overtake the bad. The bad becomes less bad in time, you know, you move on. And but yeah, it's funny how things work, you know. Now me working for Derek at Plymouth, this is my third full season with him. And both of my time at Motherwell, obviously I wouldn't be at Plymouth now, so it's all one big spider's web, I suppose, isn't it?
Absolutely. And bringing it back to Motherwell, just as we wrap things up, Motherwell now a fan-owned club, possibly on the best footing in quite some time in terms of finances. Last season, 2 cup finals, albeit not going on to lift a trophy, but certainly things looking a lot brighter at Fir Park.
Yeah, and I'm pleased. You know, I say that genuinely, because, like I say, I have good memories of it. I do have still a lot of good friends who have got Motherwell in heart. And it is a result that I always have a look for. You know, I don't think I know too many people in around the sort of team anymore. Keith Lashley, I think Paddy's moved on now, hasn't he? But other than that, you know, I don't know too many of them. But it's I'll always remember Motherwell with fond memories. You know, of good times as well as just a slight taint on the bad times as well.
And talking to these guys, you now look at James McFadden, assistant manager at Scotland, Keith Lasley, assistant manager at Motherwell, Stephen Hamill running the club's academy, David Clarkson involved there as well. That must make you feel quite old in the mornings.
it doesn't make me to see them to feel quite old in the morning. But good lads with the club at heart, like I said. And if you want your club to be looked after properly, you want people involved in the club who actually care. You know, who aren't just there for a paycheck, but lads who genuinely care, and the lads who you've mentioned that they genuinely do care. And I think it could be in good hands, and hopefully a brighter future for Motherwell.
And I guess it's easy to lose sight of Scottish football, but you'll have seen the appointment of Steven Gerrard, Alan Stubbs back involved. You've got Brendan Rodgers at Celtic, Neil Lennon at Hibs. The big names, and certainly in the managerial side, are returning to the game.
Yeah, and hopefully the good times in Scottish football will return as well. These guys who you've spoken about, these are not daft guys. They know what they're doing. They've been very successful in the playing careers and some in the managerial careers as well. So they know that obviously things are turning in Scotland. To entice them guys to go there. I'm good friends with Chris Davies, who's the assistant manager at Celtic, and we speak regularly as well, and I know he absolutely loves it there. He loves his time, and he can't speak highly enough of it at this moment in time.
And for yourself personally, is there aspirations to return to management and perhaps one day even manage in Scotland?
I'm very ambitious. Just completed my pro licence. Like I said, I managed for 6 years at a difficult level. You know, it wasn't an easy level for sure. But got a lot of experience. I've coached in the Bull Wanderers at the academy, and now I've done the head of recruitment at Plymouth Argyle for the last 3 years. So I'd like to think that I'm building a knowledge and building up my skills in each department. It's coaching, managing, whatever will be. But I am ambitious. And I'll certainly be looking to progress and put myself on the line at some point, yeah.
Greg, I'd like to thank you very much for your time tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure catching up with you, hearing some of your stories and just generally having your company for the last 40 minutes or so. Thank you again.
Oh no, I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and reminiscing good at times, isn't it? It puts a smile on your face.
Oh, absolutely. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back before the beginning of the next season. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Thank you.